Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, January 18th, the year of our Lord 2014, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
Several times we have been asked to say what the day is so people will know where they can call in. So if you want to call in, 773-1400 if that's a local call for you. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sound of our voices.
Our voices.
Yes.
We can say that
in
together.
Stereo.
Yes.
There's a new innovation for AM radio called stereo.
Wow. Was it good? We did that.
Well, we did that together. Yeah, I don't think it caused a stereo effect.
But, I think it caused a scary effect.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Anyway, telephone numbers, like I said, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We could do like the infomercials and
just
say the
nine
numbers
times
over and over again and like that. Anyway, this is Personal Wealth Coach. We talk about things economic and to do with investing and things of that issue. I've got some things to talk about. You probably do, too.
Well, there's a couple of issues, and these are major issues in to be thought of if you're at all involved in the market. Bank of America and several other companies over the last several days have put in their earnings over the last quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a consistent thing kind of coming through.
A thing.
The bond market, the thing that is typically the most conservative, the thing that is typically the place to go if you need safety, is not extremely safe right now. And it's causing the bottom line of people that really know what they're doing in the bond market to suffer. And what we saw on Friday with the dip in the market and then a come back of the market, so we were the S&P was down 0.39%. The reason why it was down, according to the headlines anyway, which I always find a little bit confusing how they know exactly why it's down, they said it's down because of earnings at these large bank positions that had difficulties in their bond buying and selling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that that had an impact on it. I'm going to use this more as an example of something that you were just saying at the end of last hour. We want certainty in times of uncertainty. And oftentimes we go to places that were certain before but aren't anymore, and we still think they are.
Well, a lot of times we go to places that never were certain.
Right. Well, yeah, absolutely. And
But we thought that they were.
That quick shoot from the hip, go to something, my daddy said this was safe, I'm going to it.
Uh-huh.
My daddy, who happens to be sitting across from me.
If your daddy said it was a safe investment, mm-hmm. particularly if he said it in the recent past,
mm-hmm.
he's probably right.
Well, yeah. But when I was growing up, I recall being told, as we were driving out onto a military installation, I remember being told that I needed to go in the back seat if I wasn't going to wear my seatbelt. And I remember this as a young child. And
well, that was because we didn't have seat belts in the back seat.
Right, yeah, but we thought if, you know, we'd go to the back seat, and that's safe. Times change, and if you're taking your investment advice from something somebody said to you 30 years ago, or some knowledge that you had 30 years ago, be careful. Be very careful, because we've got a lot more knowledge today than we did then. There are some things that don't change in the market. Psychology is always going to be the same. Fear and greed are always going to be the things that drive up and down the market. But if you're using certainties that were given to you by people of great knowledge at a time earlier in your life, you should probably reevaluate those great certainties before going forward and putting a lot of money on them.
One of the certainties that I have is that we have a caller on 773-1400, and the caller, you're now on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I'm one of your clients. The last time we spoke in Toledo, you mentioned a periodical to read, The Economist.
Right.
I started that prescription, and it's a subscription, excuse me.
Oh, it's a prescription subscription.
It's also a prescription, right.
But it's a great magazine to give you a global perspective, so I thank you that.
All right, well, you're certainly welcome.
If, again, with a limited amount of time to read, but that's very, very intense interest. What other periodicals or papers would you suggest reading?
Jake is holding up his finger over here. What do you got, Jake?
This is one that has very little to do on the surface with the economy, but one that has a lot to do with the future of the economy. If you take
the
New Scientist.
Well, yeah, but you need to read New Scientist with a grain of salt.
Check the studies that they're reading.
Yeah, because if it's like a study they did themselves, you might want to just...
Yeah.
But there's a lot of good stuff in there.
Basically, what that is it has little snippets of articles of things that are published in scientific journals within the last month or so.
Yeah.
Usually, if you go to, like, for instance, Discovery News, you'll get it. This study was published 3 years ago, and this is what's coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
New Scientist is...
Certainly, if you're a techie nut like we are, New Scientist is really exciting.
What we look at, as we were saying earlier, the last hour, we said that every company is involved in technology. If it's not involved in technology, then it's not in business. And when you can look ahead and say, what are the technologies on the horizon that are coming, you can begin to have a handle on how companies are going to act.
I have a tendency to simply say that reading New Scientist makes me more optimistic about the future.
Yes,
but
that's my
tendency. As another periodical, and it's very definitely a secondary one to The Economist, is Bloomberg Business Week. It's not.
It's much more tabloidy.
Well, they've in order to stay in business, they've gotten a little more wild and crazy. But actually, The Economist is the key. I mean. I don't know if I read the Wall Street Journal, but again, I have to be a little bit careful reading that because they are trying to stay in business.
Yeah.
The Economist, for some reason, is able to charge, they obviously charge a higher subscription fee, and they have small print, and they've been able so far to remain an independent voice. And I really don't know a better periodical or one that is anywhere near as accurate. Now, I will give you another source, though, and you're not going to like it, probably. And that is, listen to Morning Edition.
Yeah.
Some of the things that they put on there are obviously a little bit slanted, and you can probably pick up on that pretty quickly. But I have really heard some great discussions. If you're in the position where you have time to actually listen to All Things Considered in Morning Edition on NPR...
What time does that go on?
Morning Edition's in the morning, and it starts at some ridiculous early hour in the morning. But if you get internet access to it, there's apps that you can get.
I also
you
like can, Marketplace.
Right, in Marketplace. You can pick where you, for instance, if you come in later in the morning and you want to listen to it, you can actually go to California where they run it 2 hours later. But let me give you an example. They were discussing on their... on the anniversary of the Sandy Hook shooting, they were discussing gun control. And being as NPR is normally pretty famous for leaning to the left, you would expect that they would be lambasting the fact that no gun control laws were passed by Congress. They were. But they also had a person on there that made a statement that was so eminently logical that I almost... fell down when I heard it. It made so much sense. He said, you know, if every gun control piece of legislation in Congress were to have been passed a year before Sandy Hook, it would have had absolutely no effect on Sandy Hook, nor would it have had any effect on any of the other
Columbine or
massacres
anything else
that have occurred. These are cases where those of us, and he said us, and he was from I can't remember the name of the think tank, but a left-leaning think tank. And he said, these are cases where, he says, I am very uncomfortable with people running around with assault rifles. And what I would really like to have happen, personally, is Congress to pass a law that says you can't do that. But he said, we have to acknowledge something. It won't affect the death rate, because we've looked at places where gun ownership has been severely restricted, or gun purchases, rather, have been severely restricted, and it has had no effect. The he said the only way you could reduce gun deaths in the United States is to ban the ownership of guns. And he said, very frankly, that's not going to happen in the United States of America.
There is a book that is very much worth reading. And if you read this book and then apply it to all of the other periodicals that you do read, it will help tremendously. And that book is called The Culture of Fear, Why Americans Are Afraid of the Wrong Things. It's by Barry Glasner. And basically, it looks at the events that cause us to be fearful. There's another book called Thinking Fast and Slow we've already talked about that also describes this. When there is something that comes to our attention regularly, if you think of how we were before we had these great communication technologies, if we're going about our business hunting and gathering, and we keep running into the same wild cat that's trying to eat us, we become very afraid of the wild cat because it's very much a part of our lives.
I have one of those in my house.
If, however, today's wild cat comes to us through the media, and if you ask yourself, how often do I fly? Well, I generally fly 4 or 5 times a year. Well, I read about airline accidents at least once a year, which to me, my own personal life, I go flying 4 or 5 times a year. One accident equates to 20 to 25% of my flying time might result in an accident. When the reality is the bigger numbers out there say the opposite. They say this is the safest form of travel. But we have this portion of our anatomy that spits out adrenaline into our system that says we should be afraid of this because we're aware of it.
Yeah, that's called adrenal glands.
Yeah, the adrenal glands.
I just thought I'd tell you.
Yeah, I obviously knew that.
Oh,
You've got adrenaline running through your system because you've been introduced to something, and our bodies have throughout our history been used to say if you run into something, you should be afraid of it and not do it again. And now we're getting things from all over the world that we should be afraid of.
Jake has brought something else up. If you read The Economist and you look at their book reviews, that will lead you off to the places where it might be good to go. I make a point of hunting through book reviews a lot about the economy and it gives me then, I've got 3 or 4 that I have quoted several times on this program, that were written in the 1970s and 80s, but today when I look at what they forecast 30 years ago, and sometimes 40 years ago, and it's happening exactly the way they said it was going to happen, and they've been accurate from the date of publication currently to the present, I have a tendency to reread those books because they give me the underlying background and foundation that I need to, when I pick up The Economist, understand the context in which the events in that magazine are occurring.
Yeah.
And very frankly, I read the Wall Street Journal most days online. I skim it real quickly and figure out which is sensationalism and which of it is serious stuff. I read real-time economics.
Wait, let me stop you right there, because you just said the key point, and this is the thing we've been reiterating and then reiterating. Looking for the difference between sensationalism and actual data is the hardest thing to learn, and if you have a really good foundation in that, you can go out and get your information anywhere as long as you apply that concept.
But if you want to read something, subscribe to the Wall Street Journal, and online, I don't get the paper version, you skim the stories and see the ones that are going to be critical to you, and then I strongly recommend anybody who wants to understand a lot about what's going on in the economy, part of the Wall Street Journal online is a blog called Real-Time Economics. You can actually...
It's amazing stuff.
You can actually Google Real-Time Economics and go there. I don't know if you have to pay to read that one or not, but I certainly read... I think I read every story that comes up in Real-Time Economics. They have several stories a day. I may not read them in great detail, but they give me a phenomenally good insight on what's going on in the big wide world. Also, another good one, of course, is Barron's.
I just went to check, and I can get onto real-time economics without paying.
Okay, real-time economics is a good place to go. It doesn't cost anything, which means that it's probably worth every bit of that. Barron's is also something that I look at
Barron's,
once a week.
Online. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, so there's your answer. But I think he's busy doing something
yes.
else, so I'm just going to hang
thank
out
you, Thank okay. you for the call.
And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we got there's an interesting thing. How do you know if you're rich?
Well, I have a definition of rich that came from my father. That
what was
is,
that?
Rich to me means more money than I know what to do with.
Okay.
In which case, I don't want any rich clients. I want wealthy clients
yeah.
that have knowledge of every and purpose for every dollar that they have.
Well, the Tax Policy Center provided some figures that I think are interesting. If your household income, your annual household income, is $107,628 or more,
yeah,
you are in the upper 20% of income earners in the country.
Wow. $107,000 is only the upper 20th.
Yeah. Only.
Okay. Only. That's all. Yeah.
Well, but, you know, I mean, that what that boils down to is if you have a husband and a wife each making about $55,000 a year,
there you go.
They're in the upper 20% of the nation. That means mm-hmm. that 80% of the people, 80% of the households in the United States make less than they do.
Right. That
people
sounds
are
pretty
shocked
rich.
By that. Okay. Now, listen, if your income goes up so that your household income is $148,687, round figures, 150, you're in the top 10% of the nation.
Wow, that's a big leap from 107 to how much?
To roughly 149, 150.
Okay, so now 107 to 150.
It gets better. At 208,810, and again, we'll call that 210,000, you're in the top 5% of the nation.
Wow.
And if you actually, to get to the top 1%, you have to have $521,000 of household income.
A year.
Which definitely sounds like the top.
That does sound
1%.
Wealthy. People are talking about rich at that point. 500 some odd thousand dollars a year is a lot of money to
now,
just about anybody.
But net worth is a better measure of wealth, and we've said that
oh,
on
yeah.
many occasions.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know, often newspaper articles will describe somebody who made in a year $1 million as a millionaire.
Well, except that they may have just sold one-time property that
right.
they've had for 30 years in their possession, and now they have $1 million for 1 year as income.
Right, but that's only a one-time deal. But so net worth, if your net worth, and that's everything.
And you don't even have to be a fisherman to have a net worth.
Right. If it's $415,700 or more, you're in the top 20%. At $952,000, you're in the top 10%. Now, that's an interesting concept. $952,200 right at a million. So that means
you're at the top 10%.
That about 10% of American households are millionaires.
That's pretty fantastic.
That is to get to the top 5%, you got to have 1.863 million, and to get to the top 1%, it's 6.8 million net worth. So,
where are these numbers coming from?
They're coming from the Tax Policy Center.
Okay, so they've done a survey and asked people what their
net
worth is.
They went to the Census Bureau.
Well, the Census Bureau When the census people ask me about my income and such, I don't tell them.
Well, the Census Bureau in their income and net worth are using statistical analysis based on property tax rolls and the people who own 401k. There's a lot of public information
right.
that is available that will tell people a survey. Approximately where people are. For example, if you go to Fidelity, for example, and say what percentage of the people who are investing with you have this much money versus and it takes a great deal of work to bring all that together. The Federal Reserve Survey of Consumer Finances was the net worth information. So, by the way, the top 20% pay 94% of the taxes.
That makes total sense. Top 20% pays 94% of the taxes.
But there's another thing. The vast majority of millionaires in the United States live in a house that costs less than $400,000.
Uh-huh. That's probably why they're still millionaires.
They are more likely to wear a Timex than a Rolex. They will pay $15 or less for a bottle of wine. They have never paid more than $400 for a suit. They're more likely to drive a Nissan than a BMW. And they spend very little on prestige brands and luxury items. Millionaires tend to be frugal, which is one of the reasons they're millionaires.
Right. You don't get to be a millionaire unless you hit the jackpot or an actor or something like that, unless you actually know what you're doing to get there. And if you act like you have lots of money to spend, you won't have lots of money to spend before very long.
I got another one for you that you would like. Amazon just applied for and received a patent on pre-purchase shipping.
Uh-huh.
Did you get that?
Yep.
In other words, they're going to ship what you want to you
before you buy it.
Before you buy it. And they've got an algorithm and they've got it figured out to the point where what they do is basically get the thing that you're about to buy to their nearest location to you. So that when you click, and I've already had this happen, so I know I think they're already doing it. I have had the event occur where one evening, late at night, I'm looking at something, I decide I want it, I click it, and it arrives the next day.
Yeah. Well, this is great.
Which means they have pre-positioned. But the thing is, I have been looking at this thing off and on for several days.
They know that you've been looking at it.
And so what they do is they look at the number of people in an area who are looking at a given thing, and they pre-position the items nearer to that group of people so that when you buy it, they can deliver it to you next day.
Yeah, this is fascinating. Quite a lot of my purchases take place online. I buy cat food online. I buy health food
online. I bet you've never bought a cat online.
Purchased a cat online.
Right, okay.
However, Amazon allows this is more background. My wife thinks that we should be doing a lot of things healthily. It's very nice. Certain types of food that we can
I believe in unhealthy behavior.
Oh,
I want you to know.
Unhealthy only.
Right. I had an unhealthy dinner last night.
Certain types of food we
can good, though.
Purchase near wholesale price through Amazon. Cashews are a good example, or hemp seed. These things are relatively difficult to buy in a local setting.
Particularly in Texas, and it's hemp seed.
Yes. Right. Well, hemp seed. It is a legal purchase. We're not talking about the nasty stuff here.
Probably easier to buy in Colorado. Right. But anyway.
They have a subscription option.
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. I use it.
Where you can say, every 30 days, send me this much, or every 60 days, send me this much.
Right.
And that concept of being able to, in the near future, I see this very clearly, being able to purchase your groceries and have them delivered on a subscription level so that when you're out, you've got the new one already. It's there. It's shown up. You don't have to go. There is always going to be a need for fresh produce in the local area, but in the future, we may not be seeing it at a grocery store. It may be at a warehouse as it's being delivered to us. This is further out, but just ask Best Buy what they said 10 years ago about people buying things online, and they, oh, no, people want to come and look. And Best Buy's Circuit City is gone, and Best Buy is having a lot of difficulty.
And Penny's, even though they had an unusually good earnings year last year and a relatively good Christmas, is shutting down stores.
Yeah,
that's one of the issues we had this last Christmas. The overall sales were up significantly. However, brick and mortar stores across the board, particularly the larger ones, the more traditional ones, are doing very poorly. And
I didn't buy anything. Anything as Christmas
well,
gets at a store.
And that also matches up with something else that's very, very important. Our energy usage per capita has been falling for several years now, and the fall is accelerating. A big piece of that, for I know a lot of people aren't going to like this, and certainly the Republicans in Congress are going to object to this, but a big piece of that, as it turns out, is the changeover in light bulbs.
Yeah, yeah, that's part of it, but it's also we're not driving.
Right, we're driving fewer miles.
Right, well, and that's huge. And the cars that we are driving are doing it with better gas mileage.
And if you go to Austin over the Christmas holidays at any point, you're going to be parked a lot with an idle as opposed to actually driving.
Yeah, so you don't go anywhere in Austin anymore. You just sit on the highway and look at other people sitting on the highway.
And so these are big trends that are going on in the economy, and it's one of those things that fortunately the mean variance optimization asset allocation completely ignores, because it doesn't make
doesn't
any
matter.
Difference what trend is going on. And I still think it's fascinating that the very firms, the very stores that led a very similar revolution to that Amazon is generating
you're
right now.
You're talking about Sears and Woolworth.
Woolworth and Sears, and you start down the list of JCPenney.
Right.
For those of you
Kmart
who
and Walmart
who
to some extent
who haven't listened to us, they started a tremendous revolution many, many years ago. It was in the early 20th century.
Sears was in the late,
but I mean the big
late
right
19th century, where the catalogs order
right.
on the, and have it shipped on the
railroad
the train.
And they put a lot of small stores out of business, and a lot of the general store basically went away shortly thereafter. By the Depression, it was gone, and we saw that happened, and they were considered very disruptive, and now they're going out of business. Now Walmart then came along and started putting the JCPenney's and the Sears and so on out of business.
They're doing the same thing better.
Now they're hurting.
Yeah, because now the new thing is a virtual version of it, where they don't have to have, just think of the incredible expense of having a 100,000 square feet of commercial space.
Right.
That you have to keep.
And you have to
you've
got to
keep lights on. You've got to keep your environment has to be.
And you have to fill it
cool
up
in the
stuff.
Summer and warm in the winter. And yeah.
And you have to buy something before, you know, I was thinking it was so revolutionary that Amazon was pre-positioning things before I bought them. And
well,
then I
Walmart
realized.
Walmart does that all the time.
Yeah, they have to.
They have to.
Everything has to be pre-positioned.
Well, Amazon's just saying, okay, well, we think you're probably going to do that. We'll put it in this general vicinity, and that way we'll have it there. Well, they don't have to have the same level of inventory as Walmart does.
By the way, I guess you know the UPS had a hit to earnings because of excess business.
Oh, that's yeah. That basically they couldn't deliver as much as they were asked to deliver over the Christmas season.
And the surge was, as they said, unprecedented and unexpected, and it had to do with digital purchases.
Right. People are buying online. If you can get a better price online,
even if you're paying the same price, Amazon's charging sales tax now.
Yeah, they are, but they're also, you know, with the Prime, I paid the Prime cost, and I get free 2-day shipping.
And the issue is, I don't have to drive someplace and spend time looking for something that may or may not be there.
This is something, and I realize it may sound for a moment that I'm changing the subject. There's something known as the plight of the commons. And it's something that is in the economics world and the business management world. It's something that we recognize anytime there is a commonly held property and multiple people are using it, it's probably not going to be used well. Because what is in the best interest of the person is not in the best interest of that common property. And our roadways are an example of that. That's a commonly held property that we all use. And how do we use it? Well, if we look at traffic, we say, all right, in Austin, why is traffic so bad? Well, because not very many people carpool, because everybody gets in their car and they want the convenience of having their own car. If everybody carpooled, it would be better. Well, the plight of the commons is we have traffic even though people know that they should carpool, but they want everybody else to carpool, not themselves. When we're talking about long-term businesses that are out there to make a profit find inefficiencies like that, and they say, how can we provide something to people that gives more convenience than driving alone in a car sitting in traffic. And that's what Amazon's done. That's how profit gets made. There's a value in purchasing things without having to sit in traffic.
Well, speaking of profit.
Profits are good.
Town Square Media owns this radio station. And they would like us to assist them in prophesizing.
Yes.
Or profiteering or something like that. In order to do that, we have to play roughly 3 minutes of commercials right now.
I think we can bite the bullet. Let's do it.
Okay. Well, we're going to be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach following these important words from Town Square sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. I got some other
telephones.
Telephones. Yes, we have telephones.
We do have telephones, and they have numbers.
And the telephone numbers, 254 area code is 773-1400, or?
If you're going to call toll-free, it is 1-866-597-1400.
I have some good news.
Oh, well, that's going to cause the ratings to go down. I think we should skip it.
There's an interesting little piece of information that has come out. I'm trying to find the source other than the Wall Street Journal. Okay, it's the Manufacturers Alliance for Productivity and Innovation. And a guy named Daniel Mexroth, who is the chief economist there, came up with a different way of looking at economies that I think is very, very good. And that is the productivity per capita. In other words, each economy, each socioeconomic system has a certain number of people in it, and we also are producing a certain amount of stuff.
Is technical. We're sorry about using such a tough word.
And this particular productivity that he's looking at is called value added. In other words, basically from the time it comes into the economy until a product is either used by its members, consumed, or is exported, how much value added is being created per capita. And
just as a quick example, if you have a piece of raw
meat.
Let's call it a rock. It's got iron in it.
Right.
And it's now come into the economy. Now it has to be refined. Well, that's value added. And then the refined product has to be shaped, and that's more value added, and so on.
And here's the interesting thing. The value added per capita, Japan is number one in the world. Germany is number two. What's surprising here? You know, Japan, Germany, both of which have reputations for producing high-quality material.
Right.
South Korea is number three, but just a tad behind South Korea, and I mean just a little bit behind South Korea, is this technological powerhouse, this center of high-tech, high-quality manufacturing in the world called the United States of America.
Right. If you think of it, that's per capita, and the number of people in our country is more than if you added Germany, Japan, and South Korea together, which means that's why we're the biggest powerhouse.
Here's the interesting thing, and this puts something crucial in perspective. Number 10 among the major socioeconomic systems in the world is China.
Per capita value added?
Per capita value added. They are half that of Spain.
That is impressive.
And I just read today Spain's unemployment rate. In other words, if you take the number of people in Spain who would like to have a job, that's the way we measure it, by the way,
right?
Who actually have a job,
uh-huh.
Their unemployment rate is 47%.
Yep.
And Spain has twice the value-added productivity that
per
China
capita.
Does.
Again,
per capita.
Per capita. That means that includes half of their population
isn't
being
working.
Out of work.
Right. So, you know, and that is pretty astonishing. By the way, France, United Kingdom, and Spain are all basically tied. But the top folks are Japan,
says.
Germany, South Korea, U.S., and Canada.
You know what that says about Spain?
What?
Is that if they
ever got their act together.
well, it says one of two things. It either says that half of their population that wants to work and isn't is not very effective, and the only people that are still employed are the ones that are doing really, really well at their jobs, which is possible, in which case their per capita rate is going to go up. And the other half is just, not so good. Or it says that if they ever get their act together, they could be a powerhouse again.
Oh, yeah. But it also tells you that those who are working are producing well enough
to keep the whole country afloat.
That they keep the whole country afloat, whereas without a police state.
Right.
Now, in China,
they have a police state.
The difference between the relatively productive people at the top and the rest of the people, as far as wealth is concerned, results that they have to have a police state or they'd have a revolution. One of the things that amazes me,
I think they would have lots of revolutions.
One of the things that truly amazes me, and it is definitely a testimony to the stability that the European Union has, is if you look at the southern tier of European nations, their unemployment rate is so high at this point that you would almost expect to see violence going on. Now they also,
they did have violence there.
Not violence in the sense that Greece had it even a few years ago when they were having things blown up. And,
yeah, exactly. It's very much more peaceful today.
And they do have unemployment. Of course, we're experimenting with what happens if you cancel long-term unemployment. Although most economists agree it'll probably help things.
Right. Get them back to work.
But it's going to be a small percentage. By the way, that reminds me. Moody's Economics, which have been extremely accurate over the last decade or so in their understanding of what's really going on in the economy, said that the low employment gains that we saw in the last report from the Labor Department was an anomaly, that they've taken a look at ADP's gains. They have flushed out all of the erroneous data in there.
ADP is the...
automatic data processing.
Yeah, they're the folks that do most of the payroll stuff for the private world.
They had like a 283,000 number, but that was, as Moody's has said, that's a false number because at the end of the year they flush out some things that causes a distortion in their number. But they've said that all of the numbers that they're looking at, by the way, indicate that we had right at 127,000, 130,000 new jobs, not 74,000 new jobs, and that number was – that's unadjusted for anything. That number was depressed because of the weather, and that they expect to see the jobs numbers pop back up again within the next 3 months, you'll see the job numbers go back up. The other thing, of course, is layoffs are at a very, very low level, lowest they've been since, I think, 2006. So there's a lot of indication in the economy that the recovery is plowing ahead very nicely, very slowly, very deliberately, which is in its own way sort of good. Another thing I wanted to mention... I read several articles today from different people who all came out with pretty much the same number, the same information on the same time, which happens when there's a big flash or something. But in this case, it came from completely different sources who were looking at completely different things. And that is that deflation continues to be a major threat. The GDP deflator, which is the one that the Federal Reserve believes, generally speaking, when they make speeches and so on, they talk about that being the most accurate one, showed inflation overall, core inflation in our economy last year to be less than 1%. And we actually saw towards the end of the year prices dropping on a whole series of things. I recently had a communication with a person who has been a major manager in the retail business for an extended period of time. I told him that that's what I see going. He's concerned about inflation. He was about that it's coming from somewhere, from all the money the Fed's pumping in or something. And I said, no. In order to have inflation, you have to have rising wages. And you can tell whether we're going to have inflation or not by very simply walking into a series of retail stores and seeing what's selling. And if there has to be discounts to sell things, if they have to put something on sale to get it to move, and everybody is saying, no, I'll wait till the price comes down before I buy it, we are looking at deflation.
Yeah. If people
buy quickly thinking the price is going to go up,
this is an easy
that's
one.
That's inflation.
I have a receipt. And I think I showed you this receipt. And the receipt was from the year, get this, it's a long time ago, 2006. And on the receipt is a 24-inch flat panel monitor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember me showing you this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How much do you think a flat, I'm going to look this up, 24-inch flat panel monitor today is about $140.
I remember when they were in the thousands.
Okay. Well, this 2006.
Now, we're not talking about TVs here. We're talking about monitors, which are far more expensive.
Right. 2006. Today, we can get a 24-inch flat panel monitor for $140.
Right.
2006, it was $1,500.
Right.
So we're talking about a 8-year difference
mm-hmm.
to get, and that's being generous because that was a December, so it's more like a 7-year difference between $1,500 and $140.
Oh.
And the product today is better than the one that was sold in 2006. It is designed for faster refresh rates, and it has more detail. Bless you.
Excuse me.
So that concept, that is deflation. When you can buy the same product that's even better now at less than 10% new
now,
of what it was then, that's a deflationary.
Let me counter
push.
An argument here. Food prices, particularly beef,
yes,
are going to be up.
Yes.
And they're going to be up not because of something going on in the economy, but because we had a drought.
Well,
and
the drought's part of the economy.
A tremendous number of, well, not because of something's going on in the monetary system.
Right.
It has nothing to do with the Federal Reserve. We had a lot of people sell off cattle years ago, and the whole infrastructure for raising cattle has fallen. And now that we're starting to get some rain back in the Midwest, it's going to take years to build these herds up again. And as a result, you're going to see that beef, for example, is going to be expensive. So food prices and for that matter, fuel prices tend to come and go. There's a couple other things I'd like to raise here.
Yeah. And do we have any more commercials for the hour?
Yeah, we do.
So we've got a couple of things to do and some
okay,
more commercials to play.
Run a couple of things out. Number one, oil companies, one after another, are reporting, earnings misses and flat earnings and declining earnings. Nobody would have ever thought that,
Except a few years ago.
Except
the price of oil is down.
And it has to do with fracking. Basically, fracking has a new technology introduced. People used to buy oil companies dependent upon their dividends, and they're guaranteed to go up, and there's
peak,
only so much oil and peak oil.
Yeah.
That's an example of how things don't work. The other thing is, I got some questions about the fact that somebody was sending something stupid around saying that the Germans came over here to get their gold and there wasn't any gold. Well, that's fake.
What are we talking about here?
The German government stores used to store until very recently.
Federal Reserve, yeah.
Most of its gold in Manhattan under the Federal Reserve Bank.
Right.
They took about a third of it back.
Uh-huh.
Or had sometime during last year, and there was something about it not being there, and well, that was silly. Why did they take it back? Well, there were two reasons. One, the conservatives in the German government in their parliament said, we want some of the gold on hand. We don't want to be left in the Federal Reserve, which is silly, by the way, because they can sell it quicker there. Here's the other thing, just discovered. Deutsche Bank has given a pre-warning
mm-hmm.
that they're going to have some losses due to asset sales.
Gold.
Yes, and it really boiled down to the fact that Deutsche Bank was planning on that gold having increased value.
And it didn't.
Because they expected bad things to happen, and it didn't. And now as they go to sell it, which they need to do to cover some losses they had because of bad loans in Southern Europe, it's worth 28% less than it was last year. So that's what that whole thing about moving gold around, it turns out, is almost certainly the fact that Deutsche Bank needed to sell some of it, and they chose to do it in Germany rather than in New York, probably because of sales tax.
Could be.
Just kidding. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we do have some more commercials to play so the Town Square and KTM can stay in business. And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we have about 3 minutes or less left in the program today. And this is January 18th. It's amazing to me that we're over halfway through January of 2014. Seems like we just got started.
Wait a minute. We're still in January, though.
I know, but it's going fast, let me tell you. Intel is increasing production.
even though its earnings were down.
And is cutting workforce.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you, I was looking at company Shell is cutting workforce and increasing production. Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, cutting workforce, increasing production. That's kind of a theme that I, in reviewing the economic data today, I think I saw this very clearly over and over again. There's a couple of interesting points. Number one, the big traditional companies where you thought all the money was are beginning to level off or shrink. Secondly, they're cutting employment. But
I love how you say big traditional companies like Intel.
Well, it's been, you know, but it's been around. Now
it's
around, become,
it is a traditional company now.
But the National Federation of Independent Businesses Small Business Survey indicates that 6.3% in December, 6.3% of small businesses in the country were going to be adding workers in the next year. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot.
That's pretty amazingly good.
But that is the highest since October 2008. So it's another indication that we're beginning to come out of the hole in the ground.
I think the large businesses are laying off and the small businesses are hiring. That is your typical recession recovery stuff that if this hadn't been the type of recession it was, we would have seen this several years ago. This is the sign that we've been waiting for. This is the thing that we've said the lagging effect is employment.
And there's another issue in the small businesses. 23% of them had one or more unfilled job openings that they couldn't fill at the moment.
Yeah.
23%.
That's staggering.
Which and we need to have more skilled workers. Anyway,
and we're about out of time for the week.
Go ahead.
If you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting.
947-1111.
You can also reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-PLAN. That's 1-800-914-7526. You may email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, and listen to podcasts of this, I'm sure, very enlightening and humorous
and
conversation.
Your IQ will probably go down 4 points every time you do.
Warning, at least.
It's Surgeon General's warning. Till next week, this has been The Personal Wealth
True.
Coach.
It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.